You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Happy New Year from 11 Personnel, presented by Monticello Bank. I'm Nick Roush. He's Adam Luckett. Luckett just couldn't quit the Gator Bowl. He's still down in Jacksonville, where I'm sure it's balmy. There are just beautiful women everywhere. It's 90 degrees. I'm sure you've golfed every day. Maybe shooting in the 70s, right? Just perfect trip?
I wouldn't say that. Drink some cold beers down here. Didn't do any golfing, surprisingly.
Wow.
Watched a lot of football. Just took it easy, really. And so now we're, as soon as we get done recording this, we are hitting the road. But got to give the people what they want, which is a new episode of 11 Personnel. Because there is, I've almost felt bad taking a few days off. Because I feel like there's stuff we need to talk about. Even though it's kind of quiet right now. But there is some big topics out there.
Yeah, and it's one of those things, too, that part of me, it's the post-New Year's sadness, you know?
Yes.
The season's over.
Christmas that hit me last over. Night, yeah.
And, like, there's just not games all the time, so, like, I could distract myself from the Kentucky loss with football, and now it's kind of gone, and we just got to sit here and talk about a season that was below expectations and then a disappointing end in the Gator Bowl. It's kind of a bummer, but one thing we are excited about, though, Monticello Bank, we appreciate their support over 2023. They're going to be back in 2024. All the fun we have, all the stuff we do, we couldn't do it without our friends at Monticello Bank. So big thank you to Monticello Bank. Remember, that it's where people matter. Right, Peak? It's where people matter. Nope.
Well, hello, Cindy.
A lot of banks are changing hands these days. Not Monticello. We've been building relationships since 1895. And with each passing year, we've grown.
Hello, Cindy.
Hi.
And expanded our services to meet the needs of the communities we serve.
Aren't you forgetting something?
Monticello Bank, Equal Housing Lender, Member FDIC.
Love that. You got to get the dumb sucker when you go to Monticello Bank. I mean,
there you go.
It's better than a trip to the doctor. Those suckers too are better than the ones with the little loop. You know what I'm talking about?
The circle ones. Yeah.
Those sucked. Dumb's great. Just like Monticello Bank. Great. Great to have them on board again. 128 years in business. They're simply the best. But the Gator Bowl wasn't the best, and really, the longer, the further we get away from the game, the more angry I get about it. Because in the moment, like, that was an awesome football game. We had the adrenaline rushing. Things were happening fast. Now it just sucks because all you have to do is just talk about their shortcomings, and it's not fun to talk about. It's not fun to talk about with you. It's not fun to talk about with our fans on the board. It's just like, it sucks. I don't have a good way to put it.
Yeah, it's kind of tricky because a lot of times we're making like big picture declarations off of a 60-minute kind of an exhibition game in bowl season. Things get weird in bowls. We've talked about this, so you don't want to just be super short sighted. With all of this. But I just look at it this way, Nick. Like, I don't think they're super far off. Still think they've kind of got top 25 roster and talent. But they don't have those results the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And that is, I think, the frustrating part in all of this. There have been some, I think, roster shortcomings that have come and bit them in the ass the last 2 years. Offensive line. You know, the kicking game woe showed up again late in this year. And the I think the transfers they took, and they weren't ready to play for whatever reason at corner. And so that really, I think, stung them late in the year, and that's why I think they've lost a couple of games. And then you look at 50-50 games. You are what Bill Parr says you are what your record says you are. I think in college football, you are what your 50-50 record says you are. Because that's where most people are living in this sport outside of the elites. It's what you do in close games. And even the elites have to win a couple. But other teams are in a lot more of them. Mm-hmm. Kentucky just fell short in spots, you know. And that's over the last 2 years in a lot of ways.
Well, and if you go back 3 years, because I think a lot of what we're living in right now is the what's Kentucky's winning formula post-Grant era? It was pretty concrete, right? Like they developed an identity, run the damn ball, keep everything in front, play solid defense. And in that time since, you're slowly going away from that, and you're trying to figure out who you are, what you are. And in that 2021 year, I mean, outside of the Tennessee game, I think they won every close game, right? I guess a lot of those games kind of turned into blowouts a little bit. I know the Florida game wasn't. They needed a goal line stand down there, an interception from Jaquez Jones at the end. But since then, the close games have not gone Kentucky's way. And I think a lot of it is because that winning formula is changing. Look, this was before you started with KSR, but I swear, I think I wrote 17 is a conservative estimate of articles I wrote in the offseason about Kentucky getting more explosive. We finally got Kentucky more explosive, and now you're like, well, where's the efficiency at, right? Because that was the most explosive game since what, Louisville in 17, maybe? Where it's just big play touchdown. And they had
a close game, I would say. They've had some in blowouts where they mainly against Louisville. But
even like in their shootouts, like the Tennessee game or the Ole Miss games, like they were a little bit more methodical. They were kind of like what Clemson did, where you're getting 7 and 8 plays down. Like, dude, this was just like 70 yards, 60 yards, 40 yards, 30. I mean, that was a bonanza. But I don't want to say they threw out the baby with the bathwater, but it's almost like you're trying to build the plane as it's flying. And hell, we used this analogy earlier in the year, Clark Griswold, Vegas Vacation, Hoover Dam, you know, like they did plug one hole, but then what you thought was good has kind of gone away from it. So we're kind of, that's what it's felt like. For a lot of the last 2 years where you're starting to get you're finally getting some good receiver play, right? But then like the other stuff kind of goes by the wayside. And that's I think where this program is, well, you're seeing a willingness to adapt, a willingness to evolve, a willingness to adjust, which, you know, when we get to some of these specific talking points, I know people are going to be fired up about. So you're seeing a willingness to adapt, a willingness to get high quality players from the portal. But just the whole puzzle hasn't been put together. And I think that's really Mark Stoops' biggest offseason question is, where's our happy medium between these two extremes?
I think a lot of this just comes down to the trench play. I think from a long time, you give Kentucky a 21-10 lead, they're winning the football game. Because they're going to be able to grind out first downs. That was this offense's biggest issue all season. They just could not grind out first downs.
The strength and the weakness.
Even their scoring drives were 4 or 5 plays long. I mean, it's just like, boom, boom, back on the field. Mm-hmm. And so, defensively, structurally, and how they play, Kentucky has an organization that's built to kind of protect the defense. And the offense and the special teams are not protecting the defense right now. And I think overall, that's probably the biggest, I wouldn't say red flag, but the biggest concern right now is stylistically how you play. You know, you want to play this big play prevention defense, keep everybody in front. You really can't really play like that if they're getting the ball at midfield. a lot. You know, you're not flipping the field at all punting wise. I mean, you're not able to churn out, you know, first downs just to keep the other offense off the field after a long drive. Not playing complimentary football. Mm-hmm. And so, like, they have to figure out what they have to do to get back to it. I mean, I go back to the line play because Liam Cohen said after the game, you know, we got to be able to run it. To me, that's on the line. Like, we got to be able to create some running room. Even against big, you know, heavy boxes, we at least got to get 3 or 4 yards. Well, and I think that's, you know, a concern. Go ahead.
You don't have to. I think that's an off-season thing you can work on, too. Like, you don't have to have just the biggest maulers out there to create running lanes. That's what Kentucky did for the longest time. But, like, you can be smaller and still find ways to create running lanes. It's not.
Yeah.
Plenty of teams do it.
Which is something I think to look at and even go back to Cohen's pre-Louisville comments. He talked about that. What do we have to do to basically modernize our offense? What spread stuff do we have to look at? And I think that's part of it. I think you're right. I think getting out of those condensed formations mm-hmm. is something they're really going to have to look at. And especially then how does that affect your
receivers? You
know? How does that affect your tight end usage? And all of that they're going to have to, I think, mm-hmm. look at. And then but I still think it goes down to the line play. Nick, they got 3 scholarship tackles on the team next year. They're just not recruiting well enough on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
They're becoming very go ahead.
Like I forgot what game it was when the secondary was struggling and we're like, we'll just look at the recruiting rankings. Eli Cox was like the lowest. I mean, he's been a good player, but like, you're expecting this, like, the lowest guy in your class to be your 4-year captain star. You know, like, you just kind of go through the line. And I think that it was Ford, the highest-ranked recruit in that whole bunch, and he didn't even play this year?
Jagger.
Oh, Jagger. Okay, yeah. All right, glossed over him. But, yeah.
But, yes. You need, yes.
You know, like, that's part of it. Landon Young and Darian Kennard, those are big recruiting wins, and they panned out.
Yeah, line play is unique because there's definitely more random 3-stars hit there mm-hmm. than a lot of other positions, and a lot of top 150 guys bust just because it's a hard position, I think, to evaluate and, you know, develop and all of that. But they're just not doing it well enough in recruiting. So what they're creating is it's a punt on high school, and it's trying to build this through the portal. And I just, that's not, like, you can build, I think, baseline level lines where you're not terrible. A line like this year, which I don't think they were bad, but they definitely weren't good. And so you can get by with that, but in big moments and big games, it's going to show up that you just can't block the other team. And I think that showed up against Clemson. And then I think they had a lot of variety in the run game, Nick. And I think you got to credit Cohen.
Yeah.
But eventually they put everything on tape and people just figured it out, what they were doing. I think there is schematic wrinkles that you can do to hide some stuff. But they've got it in the run game. To me, they got to figure out, all right, we're running this to hell or high water, this concept. This is what we're going to be good at. This is what we're going to take to the bank. I think maybe there was too much spraying the board. Right. Maybe they need to get good at one thing, and that's how you develop an identity and player and go down the line. Because with, you know, with other, they ran inside zone. I mean, and they were going to run it on your ass. And there was, you know, most teams, except Georgia, they were able to run it and run it efficiently and effectively.
Well,
now they can't really do that at all, and they've got all these different type of run game variety, which I think is a credit to Cohen that they were able to figure some stuff out, but I think we saw in the last 4 or 5 weeks that people just figured them out in the run game.
And then it goes back to, I think what made his job hard this fall is that you would have, I think it was game 4, pin and pull, they're kicking all kinds of ass, and then week 6, they're getting tackled for loss every time they try to run pin and pull. Like, the dudes are just chasing them down the line of scrimmage. They can't even get the running back to the line of scrimmage where he's tackled behind. It was just kind of a, once you thought you had this was you're going to be your bread and butter, it got taken away. And as much as we spent time here talking about the running game's problems, a lot of it flows back on the quarterback play. A lot of it. I mean, you above average quarterback play can erase a lot of those woes, and Kentucky did not get that this year. You thought that that would be the form, and Leary was fine, but like they needed better than fine. He was going to take them as far as they would go. He completed 57% of his passes against Clemson. That was above his average for the year in the SEC play. 57% is not good, you know? And I think 130 of those yards came on two plays, if I'm not mistaken. So 130 of his 300. Two plays accounted for half of his production. He did have – but, like, that's not to take away from some of the good stuff he did, some of the nice throws, you know, like the Dankey touchdown against Louisville, the final drive against Louisville that Darty delivers to Barry on, right? Like, he found those guys that were open against Clemson, but he also had three fourth-quarter turnovers. And I'm including the last one, too, because Kentucky still had three timeouts. They had an open guy at, like, the 45 or so. I mean, he just sails it over the dude's head. How many tip – I haven't done the numbers yet, Luckett, but there was that one point of the year where I think half of his passes were either dropped or tipped at the line of scrimmage. And
yeah,
some of that's on him, right? So you have to have better quarterback play than what they got this year. Then they did not get a good rate of return. I think that's just plain and simple.
Yeah, I think you look back at Devin Leary's season, like he was, like you could make the argument he was probably the second best quarterback in the Stoops era. I think it's probably him or Steven Johnson. And that's not necessarily a great thing, but yeah, it's not terrible. He was fine. He was good. I think what you're getting at is right. What they had invested in him was they were expecting more, and I think that had a lot. In a lot of ways, the offense was kind of planning to be built around him, and it came short of expectations. And I think they were handcuffed in some ways with him at quarterback, notably tip balls at the line, no QB run element at all.
Correct. Yep.
Now, with that said, I thought he did a good job of like sack avoidance. They could have been a lot more sacks. I think he did a good job of kind of getting the ball out a lot of times where even a guy like Levis, those are sacks against him.
Like that touchdown he had to Ray, where Ray just kind of goes all over the field.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And he did it against, you know, better teams too. I mean, that was an all-year type thing. Mississippi State, I think, was probably the best of that. He got out of three or four sacks in that ball game and really kind of extended plays and didn't let any Mississippi State get any momentum. But overall, I think disappointing year.
And what I go back to, Luckett, is a conversation we had on here when we were talking quarterback pecking order and stuff like that. We would have lost a significant amount of money.
You just never know.
Just betting on Leary to be better than Brady Cook. Who in this world would have thought Brady Cook would have outplayed Devin Leary this year? I mean, I could see, like, when we're doing the KJ Jefferson or Spencer Rattler and you're trying to – but Brady Cook is one where I just, like, never in my wildest dreams would I have envisioned him having the – I thought that was the kind of year that Leary was going to have.
I'm glad you bring that up because here's a lesson I think we all should pull from this. You need to have star power. Brady Cook had an All-American running back and a five-star receiver who was going to win the Biletnikoff six or seven games in the year, and then he slowed down. They had just two dudes to go to, right, that could carry the – there were engines in that offense.
Theo Weiss was pretty great, too.
Theo Weiss was a good third option for that for Missouri. And then Cook's legs. That's where with, I think, Kentucky, like we kind of saw this in 2021. They had the engines, right, with – Chris Rodriguez, Wandell Robinson, and that's why they were able to score points. I think Kentucky this year, they on paper look like they had the engines, but it was a little inconsistent, mainly at wide receiver.
Yeah, well, sophomore slump.
And Ray Davis was he did a lot of good things, but he was very boomer bust with him, unfortunately. But I will say this. I say that with the star power. The one thing I think Liam Cohen does, and I think it might be his biggest strength as a play caller, is if he gets the horses, they've got feed in their troughs nonstop. They are getting the football.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying Liam Cohen's ever going to coach a Heisman Trophy winner, but if he's got a guy in the running, that dude is getting the Brock and they're going to try to get him touchdowns. And it's I think he gets a lot of that from Mark Whipple, because that's how Mark Whipple was. You go back and look at the year he had with Pitt, with Kenny Pickett and Jordan Addison.
Yeah.
Kenny Pickett was throwing it, and Addison was getting the ball, and they weren't running it. Those were their two guys, and that's what they – and they won an ACC title, Pitt did that way, because they had two pros. And so for Kentucky, it's getting the pros. And if they get that, I think they can find – they can ride them. Now, you look at Barry and Brown, Nick.
Yeah.
He played – he had his best game of his career, I think, in that Gator Bowl. Like, I thought he was awesome in that game.
And it's a shame, too, that you had the – I mean, he had two 20-plus yard runs, too, and that one got called back.
He was a game tilter.
Yeah.
Clemson just – they couldn't handle him, I mean, really. Mm-hmm. The kickoff return, and then he gets I haven't seen the all 22 angle of that, but I would assume he just blisters by the safety on that post. Like that's what you see it with, and that's the frustrating I think with Barham.
Mm-hmm.
It's because you see stuff like that, and it's like, if he can ever figure it out, like, this dude is going to be unstoppable. And so how can you pull that out of him for a full season? I think that's the big question, because you get that. And then you team it up with a Dane Key as a really good, you know, number two. Like that could be something. I mean, if you can find a good running back again, that could be something. But all those things have to happen together. It's like playing golf. Like, if you hit a good tee shot, it doesn't matter unless you hit a good approach shot.
Dude, you know?
And so you gotta align them. You gotta stack them. And so in one season, and that's, I think, what they need to focus on right now. If they could get that, then you could see it. But that's the thing with Barry and Brown. I know people are frustrated with him, but that guy in that Gator Bowl, I mean, that's a potential All-American.
Yeah.
I mean, it is. If it comes together for him like that, it's just...
If he can hit the drive that puts you 50 yards from the cup, but there's too many... can't get on the green and then three putts for bogey, or then on the green and then three putts for bogey. It's basically my golf game, right? Like, let's
hits the gap wedge 90 yards.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're over there in the trees.
Yep. And then you two more shots and you get on, and then you bury a long putt and you're like, what the hell is this? Like, how can I not just get on? I'm right there. There's nothing in front of me, but I top my way. You know, it's awful. I love that comp, because a lot of it for this offense moving forward is the consistency. And, you know, they're bringing in another guy, too, that was a high-volume guy in Jamori Macklin that has the explosiveness. But we'll see about the consistency, right? And that's going to be the name of the game this offseason. And that's why they're bringing in Dykeel Shorts, right? Because, like, that's kind of what he was as a player. You know, he wasn't the most explosive guy, but he was Mr. Steady Eddie for West Virginia. He turned Tank Dell into a tank. And they're hoping he can do more of that next fall in Lexington. I want to switch gears to the defense bucket, because 3rd and 18's been kind of talked to till we're blue in the face, and even more so, soft zone, bum bum bum. And here's the other thing too. I think it's completely unfair to just call it soft zone. Like, it's cover three or like quarters instead of cover two, where you're jamming up front. And I don't. Cover two kind of sucks at the college level. There's, like, huge holes there. I don't really like cover two. I'm not exactly – it looked like they were in a cover three or four for that 3rd and 18, but we don't get the all 22 angle. So, Luckett, I've talked about it in extent. I got on my sword like Jon Snow. I was willing to fall on it to say, like, hey, the 3rd and 18 didn't cost him the game. I actually think it was the right call, wrong execution. In most 3rd and longs, especially with the game on the line, like, yes, play, just keep everything underneath. I think most defensive coordinators would call it that way in that scenario. They just didn't execute. Corner bailed out. The nickel was, like, covering the flat, like it was the first down marker. But generally speaking, is Kentucky's zone defense a problem? Is this – philosophy, because that's what it's coming down to, right, is this overall philosophy that it hasn't worked. But I call bullshit, because I've never seen Kentucky defenses in my lifetime better than this. So, like, that's the part of it that's frustrating, is, like, how many times have you watched Kentucky football play a game where they hit 8 sacks? maybe twice in your life, you know? So, like, that's the part of this that there's a huge disconnect that people are letting one play and an apprehension to like, people just want to be aggressive, right? They want to go down swinging. But this style has given us the best Kentucky defense of my life. So, like, I'm not there's obviously problems here, but I think there's been a huge overreaction to one drive as to, like, the overall offensive philosophy of this program, or excuse me, defensive philosophy of this program. I think it can still work, generally speaking, but I that doesn't need to say that there needs to be no changes at all, right? Like, I just think there's one big overreaction to one bad drive after Kentucky played great defense all day.
Yeah, I do think if Maxwell Harrison and Andrew Phillips don't get hurt, I think the game looks different. But that's football,
mm-hmm.
So you have to go with that. Nick, to me, it necessarily wasn't one play. I mean, they were protecting Jordan Robinson. Jansen Dunn probably needed to get more depth there, as you alluded to. So you had players in there that hadn't really played all year. So, I mean, that it is what it is. It's just it's one play. Anything can happen in one play, right? Mm-hmm. We've seen over time. My bigger problem is the coverage stunk all year. I mean, it just stunk. They would give up high completion percentage all season. It was a poor tackling unit, I thought. You've got, outside of Hairston and Phillips, you really had no corners really step up really all year. Safety play was highly, highly disappointing, I think, for most of the year. I think it got turned around a little bit the last couple games, I think mainly because of Zion Childress, and I thought Jordan Lovett played good in the bowl game. But safety play was disappointment. So all those culminated in guys had to play that you really didn't expect or maybe wanted on the field. Like Ty Bryant played a ton.
He's a true freshman.
He wasn't playing in the last two games for a reason. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. It was out of necessity that they had to play him. And then I think, you know, Jordan Robinson was a Division II corner with size. It just hasn't hit for whatever reason. I think a lot was riding on J.Q. Hardaway. I think you go back and listen to some of our offseason. It's like they really need this guy to step up. That didn't happen in year one for him. Now, he's still got a lot of potential, I think, to grow into something. So they were just in a tough spot, I think, at corner all year. And I think you have to, like, they added three corners or three transfers over a two-year cycle. Why were those the three they added, I think, is a fair criticism. With, like, you got to get something out of one of those three in that year you just had. And that you really didn't is unfortunate. You know, and like, they're spending scholarship.
That's a failure in coaching. Like, you have to have a – not all of them are going to be hits, but, like, one of them has to be able to play this year.
I think it's – I mean, I think it's from scouting to evaluating to scholarship management to all of that, I think.
To developing, yeah. Like, it's all of the above. Like, you need to have – Harrington Valentine put them in a pinch, right? They didn't expect that.
Yes,
But now how do you –
Well, they're getting in another pinch right here because Drew Phillips leaves.
Yeah.
So you get another 50-50 draft player or draft stay guy who's gone, and that puts you, you know, in a pinch. And then you feel really good, I think, about Hairston. And then I think we're going to talk ourselves into these safeties again. So you feel good, and then there's good balance in the room, but you've got to have some guys step up here. So to me, that is the biggest issue, that the secondary just was what it was all year. They got two full-time coaches over there. Mark Stoops, got a deep secondary background.
Right.
And that was, to me, that was the biggest problem with the defense. Like, the front seven was pretty good.
And they showed improvement, I think, throughout the year, too.
Yeah. And there's a lot, I think, to get excited about with that defensive front and that front seven with Jamin Dumas Johnson coming in. Especially if that's the Weaver we saw the last 2 weeks, if that's the Weaver next year, that gets you a little excited. And then you saw some of the juice from some of these younger guys, specifically Tyrese Fearbury as a pass rusher.
Yeah, he had game.
Like, that's exciting. But
and that's right when you want the light bulb to turn on the end of his second year, right?
Like, and then you look at the just look at the quarterbacks they're going to play, man. Jackson Dart, Quinn Ewers, Carson Beck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to play some good, that's just off the top of my head, Nico.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for the Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
They're going to play Graham Mertz. They're going to play some good quarterbacks here this next season, so they're going to have to be able to cover a lot better than they did this year. Like, the pass defense was, it was not good this year, Nick. Any team that wanted to complete an 8-yard pass, it felt like they could have done it on any play against them. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have to figure out, is it right. Scheme? Is it personnel? Or a little bit of both? I think it's probably a little bit of both. So they have to figure out what's going to be the best mode of operation. And I also think, like, I've been wondering this myself, Matt House got annihilated this year at LSU.
Mm-hmm.
So why did that happen? Like, now they're running, they're a different scheme because they're running a lot more man than Kentucky is. But why is there something with how they kind of designed the defense that didn't work for? Because you know, Matt House came from Kentucky, so how much? What are the similarities here? But I found that interesting that they both had kind of bad, unexpected years.
I do think a lot of this type of defense's success is predicated on a Mike Edwards, Kyle Hamilton type, like just this kind of hybrid safety that can play up and back and really operates well in zones, just has a good feel for it, and that feel is unteachable, right? Like you just have to.
Well, I think you go back to Keedron Smith. I think with him, he was a really good zone cornerback.
Yeah, just got a great
had a good feel and awareness, mm-hmm. good tackler. I get the sense that they don't have that right now, so it's kind of figuring out on the fly, but they have to figure something out, Nick, because like their offense let them down in a lot of ways, and special teams, they were put in some tough situations. But I mean, they were the reason
the field, you know.
They were the reason they lost the Tennessee game, the defense.
Mm-hmm.
Again.
And not just that game too, but you had all of these third and long situations where it's like, all right, the front
South Carolina is a perfect example. Yeah,
the front seven's doing their job, and then on the money down, they have to get home, or you're not getting off the field.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, if drop eight's not working, you need to just.
And that was going to be my next question.
Third long, let them throw it short, and so we can play four deep and come up and tackle them. If that's what you need to do, that would be better than what they were doing. It's maybe you put send a five or six, heating up the quarterback and make that ball get out.
So is that the – that's like the obvious answer, right? But like probably not a good long-term one for next year is I think part of it is finding some personnel. But if all goes to hell in a handbasket, you go third and grant them on their ass, right? And
yeah,
just like
but that's the problem with the issue because in 2022 they were great in drop eight. And this year they're not, so – you know, I feel like this year, Nick, there was a lot of – it felt like the coaches just didn't maybe have a great handle for what the team was.
What they could do, what they were capable of.
That's what it felt like to me. I could be wrong on that, but it just felt like there was just something missing there. Like you just didn't have a full kind of grasp for what the team could do and what the best call for that personnel was. Maybe – like, you're right. They ran drop eight a bunch, and it just didn't work all year. Maybe at some point try to change some things. And I think we did see some changes. Like, you saw more pressures from Kentucky mm-hmm. in that game. Like, really, we saw corner pressure that got home for really the first time all year, I thought. Yep. Harrison forced an incompletion on third down. Chance and Dunn got a sack.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is, you know, so what? Maybe that's something they look at moving forward, but I don't know. It was a frustrating year defensively because I don't think they're bad on defense, but the pass defense was bad.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It looks bad when you play some good quarterbacks and some good passing games. And so you look back at the season in the games that people care about, like you get roasted against Georgia and Alabama. Absolutely roasted. But you also can't stop Missouri. You also can't stop Tennessee, and you can't stop Clemson in the fourth quarter of any of those games. Now, Missouri and Clemson, the offense and special teams kept screwing you over with field position. But, you know, there's some other data points, too, that say even if they didn't, maybe you couldn't have stopped them either. So that is concerning.
But to end kind of on an optimistic note, this front seven is going to kick all kinds of ass next year. I mean,
yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be great.
I mean, the way Deion played in that
ball game. And they have depth, too, man.
Yeah, like it. Just across the board. I mean, I know Deion's going to take a lot of the shine, but we mentioned Fearbury having a great game, giving some bend on that edge. JJ playing sound. Like, you even got Ox winning some one on ones, and that's kind of like what that's the best form of pass rush, right? Is whenever guys take up a lot of space, and then you know another one sneaks in there, makes a big play. See it in the NFL all the time. Like, watching Za'Darius Smith still be productive this year, like, shout out Myles Garrett. You know, like, I mean, right. That's, you know, like, that's how this works. I mean, Boogie Gravity. Watson, the way that his 2018 year, he wasn't as productive the year after Josh Allen because Josh Allen took up so much oxygen. So there's a lot of reasons to be that run defense next year is going to be exciting. But that's going to – be a lot of the offseason. It's figuring out the pass defense. Then on offense, it's being more efficient in the run game. And, hey, Brock Vandegrift, please be good. Please. Just.
Yeah, I think a lot of everything is on.
Please be good, Brock Vandegrift.
But I think Cohen, I think he's shown enough for me to believe that they'll probably get some good quarterback play from Vandegrift. I've mentioned this all the time, Nick. Like, these highly ranked guys that come out, a lot of times they just need a change of scenery. We've seen it play over and over in the transfer portal era. I think Vandegrift's another one. Like, you could easily sell yourself into, well, he just couldn't play because he had the greatest Georgia quarterback of all time and then a first rounder ahead of him. Mm-hmm. And so now he can come over and get a chance to play. And he can do some things, I think, athletically and both throwing-wise that I think Kentucky will like. And it'll be similar to Levis from a raw talent aspect in a few ways where Leary wasn't necessarily like,
well,
Leary was maxed out where I think Vandegrift is not. He's still got a ways to grow. And I think that'll be a good fit, I think, for Cohen in Kentucky.
Well, look at the quarterbacks who were at the Heisman Trophy ceremony, all transfers, the quarterbacks in the playoff games, like, you know,
everyone but Penix too ahead.
Blue chip, yeah.
Yeah, was a highly ranked player. You look at Nix and Jaden Daniels.
Which, by the way, let's talk about the playoff. Luckett, I hope you had some access to wagering. I know Florida's weird. I was just feeling blessed to have the FanDuel Sportsbook because bowl season was kind to me. I didn't have strong feelings about the nightcap. But the anytime touchdown, and the prop bets that you get in the Commonwealth and the Kentucky on the FanDuel Sportsbook app, that was the first time I'd ever hit a first touchdown bet. So shout out Dylan Johnson for punching that one in. I was a Roma Dunze touchdown away from having another 3-1 parlay hit. Had a couple other Adonai Mitchell getting in there late was very profitable for me as well. So the playoff action was kind to me because I was playing along with the FanDuel Sportsbook app, America's number one sportsbook, where new year, new promo, $5 gets you a $150 bonus bet. Like, that's all you got to do. You don't even have to win the bet. You don't have to make a winning money line wager. Just make that initial wager and go ahead and watch the bonus bucks fly in. You can win big with FanDuel this season. Just download it now. Put in promo code PIGSKIN and hop in on that action now. New customers are getting 150 in bonus bets guaranteed. Just got to place that $5 bet. 150 in bonus bets, win or lose. Just got to be 21 and present in Kentucky. It's your first online real money wager only. The $5 pregame wager is required. $10 deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable. Bonus bets expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. And like it, my only regret with bowl season is that it happens so fast and there's so much going on is that I can't share my picks as readily, right? And I haven't gone back and calculated, but I was definitely hitting at like a 70% clip. I just felt like the man on fire. Even on the way home, I didn't think I had any action in the Music City Bowl. And all of a sudden, boom, under hits for Auburn. And I'm just like, oh, there's a winning bet. Like, I didn't know I even had in there. It was a real treat this bowl season, playing along with our friends at FanDuel. Just, so many winners all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, it just, with the portal and high school recruiting, it's hard to really dig into it
like it's
the past.
Right. It's a lot of feel too, right? You know, Kansas State, they like Pop-Tarts, so give me the strawberry Pop-Tarts at Kansas State. That was a nice cover. Some nice sweat outs there. Some nice I was not happy with the Sunday Night Football result because I got the total at a weird time. So the guy I was with, he hit the over. I missed it by a half point. It's just, you know, that's gambling. But we both liked Texas and Alabama, and neither of us got it right. I think a lot of that Michigan game, you got to give credit to Harbaugh for going forward on that fourth down. Michigan should have been beating the snot out of Alabama in the first half. Alabama hung around, and then it's kind of the opposite in the second half where Alabama outplayed him, but Michigan hung around. And that fourth down call to get that guy that wide open, a lot better fourth down call than the one Bama called in overtime for Jalen Milroe.
Yeah, I think Michigan had the better year, had the better team. They won the game. I don't really have much more of a takeaway than that. I think it's going to be maybe a long offseason for Tommy Rees and Eric Wolford. They're in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
Because they got bullied up front, which is not necessarily a surprise for Michigan's front, but a lot of free runners for Michigan when that probably shouldn't happen. And then I think,
especially in the first half, the point you made on Twitter, where it's like, why are you all going five wide against this Michigan front?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, they definitely needed to help Milroe out. I think Milroe, the moment was too big. Like, it looked too big for him. Like, he kept slipping on the turf when he was getting out in the open field.
Mm-hmm.
And so, why did that happen? I don't know. Maybe it was because the pass rush had him rattled. And I say Bama, that wasn't the same Bama team. And I kind of said it, and I got some crap for it because they got hot as soon as I said, you know, going to the Kentucky game, that this wasn't a national championship Bama team. Now they almost won the national championship, mm-hmm. but you look back and it's just like, well, maybe they and Georgia play best of six. Maybe that was the one they win. Do they force a game six? Maybe, who knows? That was just a one game scenario. They got Georgia, but yeah, I think you just have to hand it to Michigan, and they won. They beat them the way you typically don't see Nick Saban teams get beat, mm-hmm. which is just, you know, a game in the trenches, and they just outlasted them there. And I think you make a good point. I think the creative offensive calls. Now there were some like the power toss to the flea flicker. I don't know why you would run two tosses. Right there, that was a little questionable to me, but there were some other things where I thought they did really well, and they won the game, so you have to tip their hat there. But I think Alabama, that was a flawed Alabama team, man. I mean, it was all year. They just got hot, and then I think the SEC was the best conference still, Nick, but I think you can make the case that it wasn't what it normally was this year. I think looking back at LSU's defense was atrocious. That Georgia team was not the – that Georgia team was still really good, but I don't think they were as good as the previous two teams. Alabama wasn't typical Alabama.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But that kind of year happens sometimes, and now we're going to get a Big Ten national championship.
So my assessment moving forward, though, from that game is can J.J. McCarthy win a national championship, right? Like, is Michigan good enough up front? Is Blake Corum talented enough to be able to consistently score against Washington?
Yeah, I kind of look at it as Ohio State, Cardale Jones. I need to dig into it more. But that game kind of has the 2014 Ohio State versus Oregon feel to me.
Well, which is fair, but also the game that Michael Penix played mine's like, can he do that again? Right? Because the way they were able to move the ball down the field, it was
Michigan is going to make his they're going to get his ass on the grass. And so how does he play taking hits? I think Penix was awesome because he was able to play in a muddy pocket and avoid pressure. But that was really a game. Texas could not get him on the ground. I think Michigan is going to get him on the ground. And then I think Michigan's run game is going to cause Washington some more problems than Texas did. But I thought Texas would bully Washington in the trenches. That really didn't happen. I really think Michigan will be able to bully them in the trenches. So, and then I think Washington, they got some fumble luck too in that game with those two fumbles there in the second half by Texas. If they don't get those, Texas probably scores on those drives. But you have to give them credit. Thing for me with Washington, first 5-6 weeks of the season, they were awesome. They were legit top two or three team. They play Oregon in that thriller, I think was towards the end of October. And then from that point until the end of the regular season, five games or whatever, they just didn't look that great. They looked like a top 22 team. They were barely getting by. Offense would go through lulls. And then they've hit another gear here against Oregon in the Pac-12 championship and then against Texas. Are they able to stay on that gear? Or are they going to progress a little bit? All signs point to this being Michigan's year. So,
I expect Connor Salyans at the Rose Bowl. That was hilarious. I will be cheering for Washington because they are fun and they're a great story.
Washington too, I think, shows if you're. Now it's gonna be harder for a team like that to get the national championship. I think in this new format, but it shows if you get the generational quarterback, and you build it around him, and you catch some breaks. Washington caught some breaks here with the Kalen DeBoer hire, and then these receivers they have. They had awesome receivers.
That is the one thing, though, like it, about this game is like, they have a clear advantage in skill talent, right? Like, it is, and how many times in this sport can you have such a decisive advantage in skill talent and get beat? That's the only part that's like going to. You know,
does it turn into a line of scrimmage game, or does it turn into, we've got superstar quarterback game? I mean, that's really
right
to me, and that's why I compared it to that Oregon Ohio State game, because that's what that matchup was. It was like, Ohio State, they don't have the court, like Oregon's got the quarterback, they're going to be able to score, but it became a trench warfare game, and Ohio State just dominated.
One thing but I know that is
– I could see Blake Corum. That might be the alt line, like over 200 rush yards.
Yeah, multiple rushing touchdowns. It's minus 370 for any time touchdown for Blake Corum, which is crazy. If there's one take that is rings true for all of this, though, why in the hell are they playing a national championship game in Houston?
It's a great point.
Why? There's no – there's no reason why this game should be played at that stadium in Houston. Maybe if you want to do something fun and go to SoFi or you want to go to Vegas, sure. But, like, this is college football. Play it at a college football stadium or play it, like, can we not just do the national championship at the Rose Bowl? Can we not do even the Superdome? It's the Sugar Bowl. It's a bunch of – you got boobs out on Bourbon Street. Like, that's college football, right? Like, I can get behind that. I don't even the Cotton Bowl being played at Jerry World. Like, it's something that's familiar. It's what we do. Why are we playing this game in Houston? It's so stupid. I'm gonna hate it. I hated all the commercials. I couldn't stay awake to watch the end of the Sugar Bowl because they didn't kick it off till 9 p.m. It used to be 8. It was 4 and 8. Why they decided to go 5 and 9 this year? They're jerks. They're bastards. I think they lost 3 million viewers.
Well,
just because people fell asleep watching this game.
They did that because it's not New Year's Eve. Because that was on New Year's Eve those years. So they want to get it done before midnight.
Yeah. Well,
this year they don't care about it because it's not on New Year's Eve.
It's just frustrating as hell. Rose Bowl can still get its sunset in the fourth quarter if you're starting the game at 4. Like, the other part of it, too, there is a little red zone in my brain that I might use to as many commercials. But, like, it was bad there. And, like, waiting around for the halftime, it's like, this is 11 o'clock. And I know that I'm old and washed. But, like, we had – everybody went back to work on January 2nd. It's not like people had the day off, you know. When Washington got the fumble and they were up 10, I was like, all right, I can roll over. I can fall. I can turn my brain off if I need to. Woke up, they were getting it done.
Have you seen if ESPN has announced of like the cast schedule? Because they used to do the coaches would all get in a room. They would have like 8 of them, and I used to watch that. I would go back and watch that whole thing. I think they stopped doing it last year. So I wonder if they're doing that this year.
They didn't for the title, and that would have been very funny because Georgia was just up by a million points against TCU. Yeah. That would have been hilarious to see what are those coaches going to do. So, yeah, I don't know. I know they'll definitely have, like, McAfee and his crew. They had Steve Kubelik on another one. Yeah, but I don't know what the alts are going to be. But it does suck. It's the final game of the year is almost here. I hate it because bowl season was a lot of fun this year. Like we had some crazy games.
Like you mentioned earlier, it does hit you like, you know, you're like depressed for a little bit. You're like, oh, another season gone. God, I'm getting so old.
It's 5 o'clock on a Wednesday. Why aren't we playing football right now? Right?
Yeah.
Why isn't a coach getting mayo dumped on him?
It's just another, how did this season go by so fast? It's looking ahead to, you know, like these. Like, it's just kind of a dead period for football the next few weeks.
And even then, you're like, sad, what am I looking forward to in basketball, right? Like, it's like, all right, SEC tournaments in 2 months.
Yeah.
Now, it'll get better once we get the conference play where there's a midweek game and then a Saturday. But we were going 8 days without a basketball game. And I don't know, it's just cold and, it sucks. It sucks. But we'll get through it. We're going to have plenty of time to dissect this season that was, look ahead to the future. There's a transfer portal visit happening this weekend. Look at Xavier Bosley. I haven't been able to look into him much other than I just see his height and weight listed, and I'm like, that's a guard. That's not a tackle. Like, he's like 6'4", 260 or something. I'm like, what? This can't be. He's got to be off. But he's from West Virginia, also visiting Pitt and West Virginia. There's some corners out there. I don't. My thought is that, look at, if they don't hit anybody now, then there's another window.
There's going to be a spring window.
Kentucky's had more success in that spring window than they've had in this one. Like, you got Keyshawn Silver last year, but for the most part, the spring window feels like it'll be more lucrative.
Yeah, it won't be as big as the first window, but it'll be bigger than this one that we're currently in. And so we'll just need to see where they're at. I mean, there's going to be a lot, I think, in both players and coaches, just figuring out for a player, where you are on the depth chart. Do you need to leave? See DeAndre Buford and David Willibaugh last year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then for coaches, it's going to be like, where do we need some more help at? I think, you look at corner last year, I think they probably came to a final conclusion in the spring that Harrison was their guy at corner. And so that can go both ways. You can feel good about a position or you can feel bad. So we'll just have to see where they stand.
Yep. But you got to get to spring ball, but that's another ways away. We'll have plenty of coverage here on the KSR YouTube channel, KSR Plus, all the places you've been hitting refresh over the last few weeks. Might slow down ever so slightly because it is the off season, but we'll still be. This is where we get to have some fun. We get to have our coaching carousel podcast. Feels like that was an eternity ago. Just a lot of stuff. We're going to be playing catch up over the next month. We appreciated y'all joining us for the entire 2023 Kentucky football season. It was a blast, and we're not slowing down anytime soon. For Adam Luckett, I'm Nick Roush. Go Cats and go Kroger.